From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point, a massive scandal at Volkswagen. Software specifically designed to cheat official emissions tests, affecting 11 million diesel-powered cars worldwide. Volkswagen marketed those cars as clean, environmentally the right choice, but they weren't. They were spewing pollution, nitrogen oxides and particulates, sometimes at 40 times the U.S. legal limit. The revelation has torched Volkswagen's image, a reputation for years built on honesty, quality, environmental leadership. This hour on Point, VW's big cheat. How could this happen? And what now? You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Are you driving one of these right now? And what do you make of apparently all the straight-up lying, cheating on the health of the planet, really? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Here's a TV ad put out by Volkswagen early this year. They highlighted their push to put more diesel cars on the road in the United States. An actor in the ad attempts to cross the street but needs to jump out of the way of all the clean diesel cars that aren't stopping for him.
Volkswagen has more diesel cars on the road in the U.S. than every other brand combined. Every Volkswagen TDI clean diesel model, including Passat, Jetta, and Golf, delivers turbocharged performance and great mileage, so you spend more time on the road and less at the pump.
And don't forget the Audi 3. Volkswagen owns Audi, owns Porsche as well. They were on a big roll at an international automotive exhibition in China last year. The now out CEO, Martin Winterkorn, then chairman of the board, and spoke about the company VW's commitment to sustainability.
Volkswagen is a driver for sustainable mobility. Our mission is to become the leading automaker in economic and ecological terms.
Ecological doesn't sound so good now. January this year, here he was. CEO Martin Winterkorn talking about his ambition for the company, interpreted here by Deutsche Welle.
We want to have the most satisfied customers. We want to have the most satisfied employees. We want to achieve good results so we can invest in the future, and we want to build the best cars. As a result, we'll be the biggest and best car maker in the world by 2018.
Okay, but in the last week, more or less, catastrophe. On Tuesday at a press conference, before he stepped down, Martin Winterkorn spoke of an upcoming deep investigation of his company, apologized to Volkswagen's customers.
Ladies and gentlemen, millions of people all over the world trust our brands, our cars, and our technology. I am deeply sorry that we have broken this trust. I would like to make a formal apology to our customers, to the authorities, and to the general public for this misconduct.
And the American president and CEO of the company, Michael Horn, on Monday at the launch of the new 2016 Volkswagen Passat in Brooklyn, imagine how much fun this was, talked about the emissions scandal and offered a straight-up apology.
So let's be clear about this. Our company was dishonest with the EPA and the California Air Resources Board and with all of you. And in my German words, we've totally screwed up. We must fix those cars. The cars will prevent this from ever happening again, and we have to make things right with the government, the public, our customers, our employees, and also very important, our dealers.
Let's be clear about this. Our company was dishonest. We've totally screwed up. We invited VW on today. They declined. Not in the mood, I guess. Joining me today from Detroit is John Stoll. John is Detroit Bureau Chief and Global Automotive Editor for the Wall Street Journal. John Stoll, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Have you ever seen a corporate implosion of this scale in this tiny number of days before?
I can't say that it's this is engulfing the company pretty fast, and it's surprising because of the breadth of Volkswagen. Even though their volumes are similar to Toyota or General Motors, VW is a much broader company in terms of the brands and the different sectors that they're in, from heavy trucks to Porsches, as you mentioned, Bugatti. GM and Toyota have had similar implosions in the last couple of years, with sudden acceleration and then GM's ignition crisis. But this one is immediately claimed the CEO and other top executives, and that's what distinguishes, in terms of the corporate saga, the issue here.
And the loss of value in the market just in this handful of days?
It's unbelievable. I mean, it is unbelievable. Volkswagen is traditionally one of the higher valued market caps in the auto industry. They run their company with that benchmark in mind. They've been successful as shareholder returns. And all of a sudden, that's gone, and Wall Street has punished the entire auto sector. It's not just Volkswagen. I mean, obviously, Volkswagen's taking the brunt, but you look at auto suppliers, companies that supply diesel and engine technology are hit because there's a lot of uncertainty about the technology itself. How clean really is it? If Volkswagen had to cheat to get quote-unquote clean, what are others doing? And this is a debate that's been going on in Europe. So I think the market was ready to punish a misstep in this technology, and you see it maybe more than anybody would have ever expected, but it's quite dramatic.
Big question on others. I mean, is there a real question now about other manufacturers potentially having done something like this, defeat devices, as plain as that?
I think at the moment there's no evidence that anyone else has. I think the big players in diesel, particularly the Europeans like BMW and Mercedes, have BMW in particular has come out and said that to their knowledge, they're not using this technology on this side of the pond. You've got General Motors as a heavy user of diesel, whether it's in the big pickup trucks or in smaller cars in Europe, and they're trying to popularize it here in the United States, saying the same thing, that they're 100% sure that what they've portrayed to the EPA and California Air Resources Board and regulators in the EU is actually the truth. So in terms of these devices, it's unique to Volkswagen at the moment, but you better believe there's a lot of investigation going on by regulators, media, and of course external think tanks and research groups, which actually, you know, you can attribute the entire scandal to the fact that an outside research group was helpful in uncovering it.
Well, we're going to talk more about that. You've got the company's own executive committee, as I read it here, seems to be recommending criminal investigation, criminal
That's right.
proceedings. This is famously a top-down company. Martin Winterkorn, who just resigned as CEO, is famously involved in everything. But he says, "I am not aware of any wrongdoing on my part." Is that possible? I mean, how could you, if these results were dependent on a trick of software rather than something that was really in the technology producing such a clean performance, how could somebody with their fingerprints all over this company's work not know about it?
Well, it's hard to imagine that that's the case. I think if we harken back about a year and a half ago, the same questions were being posed to GM's senior management team when the ignition switch crisis emerged. How did you not know about this? I mean, your lawyers were settling cases, and you had multiple deaths attributed to this, and recalls, and what have you. And you know, this is what will be the subject of an internal investigation that will take several months to complete. Either exonerate or show that those statements are not correct. I mean, I think he's choosing his language selectively. There's no reason to believe that this didn't have to be a very small group of engineers trying to meet a benchmark, inserting this code in the software and making it, you know, so they could utilize it in areas where they need it. But you're starting to see heads roll in engineering, and you're starting to see heads roll at Volkswagen that are very close to Winterkorn. So it could be his immediate, the immediate sphere around him that did know about this and didn't tell him. It is hard to believe, but and because diesel is such a big part of their push, this is going to be very evasive or very, very submersive in terms of how many people were involved.
I want to look with you at just how such a big company with so much on the line for the company, for the climate, right, could go down this road. Let's hold that for just a second. John Stoll, global automotive editor for The Wall Street Journal, with us from Detroit. With us from Washington right now, Tyson Slocum, director of the energy program at Public Citizens, consumer advocacy group there. Tyson Slocum, thanks for joining us.
It's great to be here, Tom.
How big an affront, an insult to consumer trust are we witnessing here? Can it be bigger than this?
Oh, this is just unbelievable. I've seen a lot of scandals in the energy and automotive sector, but this has to be one of the biggest. And I think one of the big takeaways here is just how critical a role federal regulators have to play in upholding public health and public safety laws.
We are told all the time that there's overregulation, there's too much of a federal bureaucracy, et cetera. Is that what you see here?
No. What I see here, Tom, is why we need federal regulators, because the Volkswagen case underscores the lengths through which some corporations will seek to lie and deceive the public and regulators. And so one of the takeaways from the scandal has to be more resources and more enforcement authority for regulators like the Environmental Protection Agency, because they really are the last stand of defense for our public health and public safety. The other big takeaway here is, as you mentioned, this appears to be a systemic issue at Volkswagen. It is hard to believe that this contraption, this computer program linking up with the emission system, was a project of just some rogue engineers. The complexity of it, the fact that it was in the onboard computer system and it had to interface with the emission system,
and it's fundamental to the car's performance. This is not just an ignition switch, as important as that may be. This is about the fundamental performance of the automobile.
Absolutely, and that shows that there must be some systemic management failures in the company itself to allow this kind of extensive fraud to occur. And we have to see criminal accountability for any and all executives that conceived of or knew about or helped to implement and manage this fraud. And the big test is going to be, you know, the Obama administration's Justice Department came out with a memo on September 9th and said, we're going to start getting tough on white-collar crime. This is going to be the test case of how strong that commitment to holding corporate executives who willfully break the law accountable.
You think there's an extradition request on its way to Berlin for an ex-CEO of Volkswagen?
If an investigation points that way, absolutely.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Volkswagen's, VW's giant deceit and tumble over cheating on emissions, why they would do it, how they did it. We'll look at that in just a moment. And now what? For the company, for the owners of these cars, nearly 500,000 in the United States, 11 million produced worldwide with this defeat device that would let them evade, really lie to, emissions testing procedures. Here's Jake Fisher, head of auto testing at Consumer Reports, talking with NPR Tuesday, actively telling consumers don't buy Volkswagens.
We want to make it very clear that we do not recommend you buy those cars, because really there's no telling when they're not cheating.
That's Consumer Reports. Here's Auto Finance News. Jim Henry telling AP, interview Tuesday, that Volkswagen has hurt its relationship, well, I guess so, with loyal customers.
Those diesel owners are real, true believers. And for them to be disillusioned, that is really going to stink.
But here at a press conference after the announcement of the CEO Winterkorn's resignation yesterday, the senior board member here, Berthold Huber, keen to put the question of whether or not Winterkorn knew about emissions cheating to rest, saying no, he didn't know. Here he is speaking through a CNBC interpreter.
We want to explicitly say that Mr. Winterkorn had no knowledge about manipulations of emission measurements. His readiness to take over responsibility for Volkswagen in this difficult situation sets a clear sign, and we greatly respect that.
John, hey, don't look here. Not here. Not here. John Stoll, global automotive editor for the Wall Street Journal, is with us from Detroit. Tyson Slocum with Public Citizen in Washington. We'll hear in just a moment from one of the people who discovered the emissions cheat. A couple of calls. First, Mike in Plymouth, Wisconsin. Mike, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Well, certainly jail sentences. And I think it's kind of appropriate that on a day when Pope Francis called for the end of the human death penalty in Congress, we should have a corporate death penalty, and I think Volkswagen will cease to exist in 2 years.
Wow. I mean, such a big company. They're up against big challenges right now. Others have come back, but it's big. And you say jail terms, please. Another Michael, Arlington, Massachusetts. Michael, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Isn't this come under the racketeering laws? In other words, this is a widespread, ongoing, long-term frauds over and over again on everybody that bought the car and everybody that breathed the air. If we extradite them, shouldn't we extradite them from the bottom to the top so we turn each one the way we turn drug dealers up to Mr. Big and charge them with the criminal ongoing racketeering organization? Therefore, they will have to disgorge not just their profits, but all their revenues from the crime.
Michael, you're thinking very ambitiously. John Stoll, let me bring that to you first. Racketeering charges, I mean, going on for a long time, and somebody had to know. At the same time, I'm reading headlines saying that this test rigging, New York Times says, follows a long auto industry pattern that automakers have, you know, looked for all kinds of ways to at least trim on emissions testing for a long time. If there's racketeering at Volkswagen, would that finger point more widely as well, John?
I think the distinction needs to be made between trying to gain an advantage, trying to have a number, a fuel economy number,
taking out the back seat, or
and get the best possible number that you can through the most optimized testing, versus having a long-standing 5 or 6 year campaign to deceive regulators. And you know, in 2012 and 2014, when this all began to be investigated, Volkswagen did not come clean, and really didn't come clean until about a month ago.
Yeah.
After a lot of interaction, after a recall, after discussing this with regulators in California and Washington.
In other words, finally, lots of lying along the way.
It was active. I don't know how to speak. You know, I can't speak to racketeering or what the Justice Department is going to do, but they'll find the appropriate charges. If indeed they want to bring criminal charges and figure out a way to go about this. I think in the wake of what happened with GM and the $900 million settlement that they came to, there was some disappointment with the size of that number. This may be, and this is just an educated guess, this may be a bit more egregious to prosecutors, given the blatant deception that went on. I mean, and Volkswagen's not backing off from saying that blatant deception went on.
They've said they've set aside $7 billion for fixing cars. People are talking potentially $8 billion in fines here. Beyond that, I don't know, and $7 billion, that's just a beginning. George in Waterbury, Vermont. George, you're on. Thanks for calling.
It's Tom. This is a different take on this. I've been a TDI owner for the non-clean diesel engine, and then bought one in 2011.
So you own one of these. What do you have, a Passat, Jetta?
Jetta,
okay.
And they're wonderful vehicles. Mm-hmm. The diesel engines are very congested, the new engines, with many, many sensors that I won't even go into some of the issues with that. But what you really need to look at here is that stop thinking that Volkswagen is the proprietor of the problem. Volkswagen is smart enough that somewhere along the line they interpreted something. We're not at the bottom of this by any stretch of the imagination. My opinion is that what you're going to find is that there was, you know, some troubles going on in other aspects of how they got the regulation and so forth. So, to me, don't be so quick to just totally point the finger at Volkswagen here.
I mean, who else could? It's their car. Are you saying they outsourced the software so somebody did?
No. They have to have regulations that have the set of criteria for what they do. And somewhere along the line was given some sort of leeway. Just, well, you know, we can kind of skirt on the edge of this, and this could be interpreted a different way.
But, George, I'll look at that for you and with you here. But, I mean, when the emissions are 40 times what are being claimed, that gets your attention. I want to go to that, if I may, from Ann Arbor right now. John German joins us, senior fellow with the International Council on Clean Transportation, one of the two people who discovered that Volkswagen's emissions were much higher in the real world than on official tests. John German in Ann Arbor, thank you for joining us today.
Yes. Hi, Tom. Well, I will clarify, it was actually a small team of which two of us have become the point people.
Okay, fair enough. How did this come to light, John? You weren't digging for this. It just showed up, I guess.
Yes. This actually started in Europe, where it's been known for some time that diesel cars in Europe have high NOx emissions. ICCT has been involved in those studies, and about 2 years ago, our office director in Europe, Peter Mock, had this bright idea that we should test cars in the U.S. And the reason is the standards in the U.S. are more stringent, and both EPA and CARB have a lot of authority and a lot of experience in enforcing requirements.
Yeah.
So we fully expected the cars would be cleaned in the U.S., and then we'd take them back to Europe and say, hey, they're clean in the U.S., you guys can do it too.
Mm-hmm. You can raise your standards, it's all right, everything works.
Yeah. So we were as surprised as anybody. When we got the results.
I mean, how did these results come in? You were running it on the highway and finding that you weren't getting the same emissions that you had when it was, just spinning for a lab test?
Yeah, exactly. one of the developments in the last 5 or 10 years is portable emission measurement equipment, basically miniaturized stuff you can put in the trunk of a car and drive around in the real world and measure emissions second by second. And that's we contracted with West Virginia University because they had such a device, and that's what we did. And the emissions, we drove five different routes in the real world, and on the two VW vehicles, the emissions were high all the time. And yet, when we brought it into the dynamometer, California Resources Board tested them at their facility.
Okay.
They passed the official certification test.
When did it dawn on you, as Volkswagen now admits, they admit that this was a deliberate deceit?
Right. Well, I mean, our first thought was, is there a malfunction on the car?
Yeah, yeah.
But then you looked at the results from the official test, and it passed. So they can't be malfunctioning. So, I mean, this was beyond what we normally do. We're a data and analytical organization.
Yeah, you're not a muckraking journalist outfit, and VW has had a good reputation.
Yes, they have. So we just took the data and our report and turned them over to CARB and EPA and said, we think you should investigate.
And EPA came to the conclusions. John, stand by there in Ann Arbor. Wes in Hampton, Virginia. Wes, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. Yeah, so I want to shine a broader light on this maybe. I'm an engineer by training and a university professor.
Mm-hmm.
And although we'll find out, it's difficult to imagine that this occurred without technical people, engineers, knowing it was happening. And, I teach ethics classes, and you know, engineers have a reputation in society of being trustworthy.
Yeah.
And it concerns me that although it remains to be seen, it's difficult to imagine that technical people, engineers, weren't aware of this and even complicit. So I'd like to...
Well, Wes, can you picture this not being understood by executives, hands-on executives overseeing big engineering departments? Wes, I was putting that to Wes in Hampton first. I'll bring it to you, John. But Wes,
yes,
as an engineering professor, I mean, what about the executives here?
So I could imagine that people several levels above could be unaware of this. I think I could be convinced of that. The team leader, the engineering team leader, who has detailed understanding of these systems, it's difficult to imagine that he could see a 40 times decrease in pollution or emissions and not ask a lot of detailed questions of how did you accomplish this. And so it's difficult for me to believe that individual didn't know that there was a cheat put in place.
And these are hands-on executives. But yeah, it is. What about that, John? The sort of ethics down at the engineer level, our professor of engineering says it looks like an eyes wide open lie.
Well, this is a very sophisticated detection scheme involving very sophisticated computer code. So it's not something that happens by accident.
Mm-hmm.
So certainly people knew how high up did it go. Really depends upon management style. You know, if the manager says, here's the target you have to meet on cost and efficiency and everything else, and we don't care how you do it, and you know, somebody below that level feels pressured to start doing this sort of thing.
Yep.
So it's hard to say how high up it went, but certainly individual engineers are not going to do this on their own. Someone is going to tell them to do it.
Tyson Slocum in Washington, is it possible that more broadly we are somehow living in la-la land on what our automobiles are actually emitting? Does this look like a one-off to you, or is the system being worked from all sides here and we're sort of suckers in the middle believing what we see, you know, when we go to the car lot and read the piece of paper stuck on the window?
You know, I'd be surprised if there are other auto manufacturers that went to the lengths that VW here did to lie and deceive. But that said, what's clear is that we do not have an adequate regulatory structure. The Environmental Protection Agency does not have the staffing, the financing, or in some cases, the explicit regulatory authority to do its job to the maximum extent possible to protect public health and public safety.
I mean, it looks as though without John German talking with us here and his crew and West Virginia University stumbling on this, we wouldn't have known.
That's right. And so when we go to the lessons learned part of this scandal,
mm-hmm.
we have to acknowledge the fact that corporations have a track record of deceiving us, of going through great lengths to avoid a compliance with the law. And that's why we need a robust regulatory structure. It's very popular in Congress right now to beat up on the EPA, but this Volkswagen scandal shows just how essential a well-funded and transparent regulator is.
John Stoll, how does this get set right? What about for the owners of these 500,000 vehicles just in the United States? What can they anticipate? Is it clear at all at this point?
Well, I think they can anticipate another recall at some point, where these vehicles are going to have to be brought back into the dealership and addressed either from a software standpoint or more hardware. Whether or not that affects performance, such as the fuel economy numbers or the horsepower numbers, I don't know.
Seems pretty clear it's going to affect one or the other.
Yeah, yeah. I think most people think you're going to see a dent to the way the vehicle performs. But, you know, you also have the question of how is this going to affect resale value of what had been cars that resale valued pretty well. I mean, you put a used 2011 Jetta wagon on the market with diesel. There's so few of them, and there is a lot of demand. This was a prized vehicle in the resale market. We've heard reports of the values of these cars being dented significantly, up to 20%, maybe more. That's numbers just based on our reporting, but that's a significant fall within a week. And that could rebound, obviously. This is a short-term knee-jerk, but over time, that's a question that's going to need to be addressed. And whether Volkswagen can stand in America anymore, the Volkswagen brand, Audi and Porsche are doing real well. Volkswagen has been struggling for quite some time to get its act together. They have a lot of dealers who sell very few cars, and I think they need to reevaluate. I think they will reevaluate whether or not they even need to be in the United States with this current platform, or if they need to rethink the strategy.
Boy, that's wild. John German, you're at the International Council on Clean Transportation there in Ann Arbor. This is sort of your business. Did this ever add up to you, this amount of horsepower and performance that was this clean? Their marketing trumpeted about it, but did the base numbers add up to you that it could be that powerful and that clean at the same time?
Yes, absolutely. You know, we did test the third vehicle in our program, which is a BMW X5, and it was very clean under almost all in-use conditions. You know, it can be done. It's just a question of not cutting corners.
But corners clearly cut here, I guess. Are you all looking at other manufacturers now, John, or is anybody?
Right. There's no data or information that says that other manufacturers are doing the same thing, but it's the right question to ask. Absolutely. It has to be. Other manufacturers have to be investigated and make sure that it's not happening. And it's not just the U.S. It's Europe. It's China. It's India. It's Brazil. Government agencies worldwide need to be more vigilant about this.
I mean, we've got this big climate conference coming in Paris at the end of this year. It's premised on a certain amount of output that I suppose ties back to what companies say their vehicles are producing. If all of that or some significant portion doesn't add up, that's pretty strange. John German, please stand by in Ann Arbor, Michigan. John Stoll in Detroit with the Wall Street Journal. Tyson Slocum with Public Citizen in Washington. Thank you so much for joining us for a minute today, Tyson.
Thank you.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at WBUR.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Volkswagen's big deceit and tumble over cheating on admissions, why they would do it, how they did it, and now what, with John Stoll. He's global automotive editor for the Wall Street Journal, with us today from Detroit. John German is with us from Ann Arbor, Michigan, senior fellow with the International Council on Clean Transportation. They, along with the University of West Virginia, West Virginia U, were the ones who figured out what was going on here. They didn't set out to blow a hole through the side of Volkswagen, but they just discovered it along the way, and boom, here's Volkswagen in big trouble right now. NPR Sonari Glinton talked with the VW customers, three of them here, earlier this week.
I just feel deeply disappointed, and it leaves me just with a level of, I just don't like to be deceived.
I've been a fan of their engineering over the years, but this is a bridge too far for me.
They have admitted, yes, we purposely misled you, and that's a pretty big deal.
Nobody likes to be deceived. Peter, lots of response online to us here. Peter on Twitter says, just bought my third TDI 3 weeks ago, bought them because they are clean diesel, quote unquote. He says, totally sickened. Angie writes to us, shows we cannot believe companies on their tests. Their interest is profit, not honesty. All these tests are done by the companies themselves. So, you know, relying on them, well, that is what we do. John German in Ann Arbor, here's one maybe for you. Chris writes to us, what performance improvement is achieved with the software code? For example, would there be 5% more power and mileage, maybe even 5 more miles per gallon? And Chris goes on to say, diesel propulsion started with ships and power plants and railroads, then trucks. Maybe scaling diesel down to car size has been problematic. What do you say to all that, John?
Yeah, there's unlikely to be an impact on the acceleration of the vehicle. A maximum acceleration rarely occurs, and it's not really affected by emission standards because of that. But there is definitely a potential trade-off with fuel economy. And that can vary a lot depending upon whether it was just in the after-treatment system or VW also changed engine controls. So there's no way of knowing how large the trade-off is, but there is definitely a trade-off with fuel economy and NOx emissions.
Let's go to Eric in Nashville, Tennessee. Eric, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. Hi to lots of your guests. One question I had, and your guests may have touched upon it briefly. We're talking about this because it has a populist appeal, and rightly so, because it was malfeasance on a grand scale. But what we're talking about, them possibly ceasing to exist altogether or ceasing to exist in the United States, have we considered the social, economic, and political aspects of that right now? Angela Merkel is inviting in tens of thousands of immigrants who are moving into the Germany area. And if we're talking about putting possibly tens of thousands out of high-paying jobs, that is going to have a ripple effect across the economy. And right now we see right-wing political parties starting to rise in power there. I can only see this fueling the flames there with if Volkswagen takes a huge hit, as it will likely seems to be, particularly with the whip up, as you, if we will say, of by the media, because I mean that's warranted because of the situation.
Eric, you put a smart finger right on it. I'm really glad you raise all that, because it is up at that scale, John Stoll. This is one of Germany's very biggest companies, and there's a lot on the line at a time when Germany is being buffeted from lots of directions here. What are you hearing out of Germany, John, about, you know, the hit to their economy if Volkswagen really really stumbles big on this at a time when they've got plenty of difficulties with the EU, with the migrant refugee crisis there and all the rest?
Right, the auto industry is a huge employer in Germany, and no company is better known in that sector in Germany than Volkswagen. And one in every 7 jobs can be attributed to the auto industry in Germany. And this is a big concern for everything from the value of the euro to Germany's own GDP and its ability to maintain the kind of economic trajectory that it's had recently, sort of being a bit insulated from the wider concerns in the EU. You have to assume that there will be a lot of actions taken to stabilize Volkswagen. The real question probably is going to be what will this economic and strategic hit do to the forward momentum that Volkswagen had? Volkswagen has become the largest automaker in the world, not just in Germany, but in the world over the first half of the year. They are huge in China. They are a big player in other markets such as South America, and they do have a very wide presence. So the, you know, foreseeing a complete collapse of Volkswagen or the infrastructure that they have in place is probably a bit premature. This is where the new leadership comes in. Out with the old, in with the new. It's a different strategy than a lot of other companies have taken in crisis. A lot of times they want that leader at the helm to kind of take them through crisis. In this case, you're going to see a change in leadership and likely a change in direction for a company that had a very, very staunch way of doing business for a long time. Will need to change, will need to address, may need to get a lot leaner to survive given the kind of costs and repercussions it faces.
Volkswagen, one of the biggest companies in Germany, 274,000 employees, 29 factories there. Times quotes a banker here today, Carsten Breske, chief economist at ING DiBa Bank in Germany, about everything Germany's come through, and now here they have this threat from the inside. It says, while the German economy defied Greece, the euro crisis, the Chinese slowdown, it could now be facing the biggest downside risk in a long while. The irony of all this, says the German banker, is that the threat could now come from the inside, its own company, Volkswagen, rather than from the outside. Jason, in Enterprise, Alabama. Jason, you're on the air.
Well, I kind of wanted to bring a different aspect, a point of view to this conversation. Obviously, what Volkswagen did was very deceptive, and that's wrong. And I'm sure they're going to be fine, and they're going to be required to pay for it. I don't think, personally, it's the end of Volkswagen in America. I had the opportunity to live in Germany for about 10 years, and Germany is very environmentally friendly, very forward-thinking, and much more progressive, in my opinion, than America is.
Yeah.
So we're talking about a small four-cylinder diesel car here that averages probably between 35 and 40 miles per gallon. Very good gas mileage in America. And I'm driving on the roads here, and there's tons of huge SUVs, huge trucks,
yes,
things like that, that are probably averaging about maybe 15 to 25 miles per gallon. So,
put it in perspective, you say.
Yeah, I think so. As far as the EPA is concerned, I mean, is this small four-cylinder diesel vehicle that's emitting a little bit more emissions really that big of a concern?
But 40 times more, Jason, and there are 11 million of these on the roads.
Okay. I
take your point. Our time is short, but I take your point. Look around America at everything that's blowing out here from someone who's spent some time in Germany. It will be interesting when they go to Paris for this big climate meeting. They were coming in with a lot of credibility because of everything they've done on wind power, getting off fossil fuels and all the rest. Now, this bruise. Pat in Tunbridge, Vermont. Pat, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I appreciate the big picture analysis, but I'm a little tired of the blame game. I'm far more interested in not just that big picture. I want to know what the cost to present owners of the vehicles to bring their vehicles into compliance is going to be. And that cost is, are there engine modifications to restrict those NOx emissions, and what will they cost? And what is the loss of performance, both in mileage and power, when you do that? And finally, who's going to pay for the loss in the value of the cars in terms of the resale market?
We've got big suits being put together all over the place here. John Stoll, what about that? The cost to set this right and performance costs if those changes are made?
Yeah, Volkswagen has set aside multi-billion dollars to handle this. The fines aside, dealing with customers, we've seen anything from a price tag of $2,000 per car to lower, but it's going to be expensive. And I think in terms of Volkswagen dealing with their existing owner base, it has been brought up already on this episode that you've got a very enthusiastic group of people who understand emissions, not just fuel economy, not just saving money, but also emissions. They really have a social conscience in buying this car and bringing them back. The issue for the previous caller is this is about credibility. This is not about a small park of cars. This is about credibility.
Yeah.
They have lost that credibility. So when it comes to the current owner base, they have to if they want to preserve that enthusiasm, if they want to preserve that loyalty, they're going to have to bend over backwards, and that means financially to make right resale values and the feeling of betrayal. Now on performance, fuel economy is likely going to take a hit. I'm not too sure about the horsepower and what the performance of acceleration is going to look like, but it probably will get lower numbers than the advertised sticker value on the car when it was bought.
What about that, John German? Mileage, horsepower on the other side of a fix to this cheat, how's it likely to be changed?
Yeah, I mean, the horsepower is probably not going to change because it's not really that affected by emissions regulations. The fuel economy is definitely going to change. And how much will probably be different on the Jetta than the Passat because they use different emission control systems to control NOx, and they have different interactions. There's also issues with is VW changing engine calibrations as well when they go through this field fix, and that has an additional unknown impact on fuel economy. So we really won't know until we see the final fix coming out of VW what that impact on fuel economy is going to be, but there'll definitely be one.
We're seeing a report coming out just now that Volkswagen will name the head of Porsche, one of their companies, Matthias Müller, as the new CEO, current CEO there at Porsche. John and John Stoll and John German, please stand by. Zeynep Tufekci joins us right now from Chapel Hill in North Carolina, professor of sociology, University of North Carolina, professor in the School of Information. Zeynep Tufekci, welcome to On Point.
Hi.
You make an interesting point, writing in the Times lately, that part of this should make us think about software that is all wrapped up and copyrighted and closed that we can't see, that's running things all around us and without transparency. We don't know what's really going on. What's the change you're calling for, Zeynep?
Well, obviously we have more and more computers. I mean, your car is basically part computer nowadays, and that's not the only device that's part computer. And that makes it smarter, right? It can brake a little better when it's slippery, but if it's smart, it means that it can also cheat in a smart way. And this is exactly what was going on. The car was cheating the emission test by detecting that it was being tested and behaving very well, like a parent, you know, looking at a kid and the kid behaving. And as soon as you turn your back, it went back to its polluting ways. And I'm betting this is not the first or last instance of a smart object beating benchmarks or tests using its machine intelligence. In fact, this is kind of rampant in the chip industry and phone industry. A lot of phones and chips cheat on tests. They detect when they're being tested, and then they behave differently. And now we're seeing other objects. And as more and more of our devices, you know, not just our cars, but our cities and our fridges and this and that.
The Internet of Things and all that, yeah.
The Internet of Cheating Things is what I think will be coming, because the code is proprietary, meaning that I don't get to see it. Like, even if you have a Volkswagen, you don't get to really see the code. You don't get to inspect it. More importantly, you might not be able to know what's going on. They tried very hard to make sure that researchers, independent researchers, couldn't inspect it. It's a whole new world for objects that can cheat and lie to us in smarter ways.
And so know when we're watching, when we're testing, and when we're not. So right. what are you imagining here as a fix to that? If we're headed into the Internet of Things, software embedded all over the place, how do we get more transparency about what's really going on?
Well, the first thing that needs to happen is the testing has to be in the wild and under conditions that hopefully don't alert the object that it's being tested.
You mean not in their lab, all in their hands?
Testing things that have computers in them in labs where they can just even use their GPS or the barometer pressure or anything to understand, uh-oh, they're looking at me. Mm-hmm. That's not okay. The second thing that I would like to happen is the source code for these critical projects to be inspectable by independent experts. The companies like to use copyright claims to shut down research in their cars, but you know that just means we don't get to see what's going on rather than protecting anything. So that's the second thing. The third thing is we're definitely going to need smarter ways of catching cheating, and that might involve using some computational methods to ensure, you know, security and integrity of what's been going on.
Yep.
And people might say, you know, this is really hard. But when I was researching into this, I found out that casinos and their slot machines are actually very well regulated. If there's one place in this country where you can be sure of being fleeced just the right amount, but no more or less than what the regulations say, it's apparently a slot machine. You know, the code they have is inspected. They have all sorts of oversight. Yep. Which means if casinos can do this for gaming, are voting machines, are they inspected like that? No, they're not. Are our cars inspected like that? They are not. There's so many crucial objects.
Watch the software. Zeynep, stand by. One more caller, if I may. Karen, Columbia, Connecticut, you're on the air. Our time is short, Karen.
Oh, hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
I just wanted to say I have owned an A3, and I'm a current owner of a Volkswagen Jetta. Both diesels, both in this discussion.
Yep.
And, you know, I hope that someone's going to start talking about all of the EPA standards are about the carcinogens. and what they do to our health. We're talking about finances and criminality and, you know, how to test things. But, you know, why aren't we talking about the impact of my driving these cars for 6 years? And shouldn't Volkswagen require us to turn these cars in and give us another car? And when they fix it, I'll give them back their car and they can give me my car back. I love the car. I hate what they've done.
Health at a climate and planetary level, health maybe at a personal level. Karen, who's driven them and driven them for a reason that now seems betrayed, I don't know if they're going to hand you a new car. My guess is they're going to offer you a fix. How that all works out for Volkswagen in the end, and yes, for personal health and climate and all the rest, is going to be fascinating to see how this one works through. Zeynep Tufekci at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, thanks for taking us into this closed software angle, Zeynep. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
John German in Ann Arbor at the International Council on Clean Transportation, where they helped crack this whole thing open. Didn't intend to, but they did it. John, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure.
And John Stoll, Detroit Bureau Chief and Global Automotive Editor for the Wall Street Journal. We'll keep reading your reporting, John, and all of your crew. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Good conversation. Thanks.
Listeners, thank you for joining us. Good luck out there. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.